Welcome to the Equip Podcast, where we talk about holistically growing in our Christ-likeness through formation practices, becoming the Sadakim in all of life.
Welcome back to the Equip Podcast, everybody. I am Pastor Kev, and I'm here with Pastor Jake and a new guest, Corey Wilson, here to join us for a new conversation about work and faith and all things under the sun. Corey, how are we doing today?
I'm cold, but I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I don't know why I said under the sun. It's 9 degrees outside.
There is no sun.
Yeah. So, Corey, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So, my name is Corey Wilson. I teach at Calvin Seminary here in Grand Rapids, areas of mission and public theology and world Christianity, and basically focusing on the church outside of Sunday morning and outside the walls of the church. But ironically, I wrote a book about Sunday morning, and so it's kind of ironic. But yes, that's what I do. I'm married to Monica Marie, and I have two boys, Warren and Samuel.
Awesome. How long have you been married for?
11 years.
Wow.
Sorry, I had to pause on that.
And how old are your boys?
Quiz.
That's easy. 4.5 months. 4.5 years and 20 months.
Okay. And they're fun to travel with, yes?
Yes. Yes.
Nobody likes inside jokes on a podcast.
Awesome.
Well, what is public theology, just for those listening that might not be familiar with that term?
Yeah, so public theology is a broad area that focuses on the Christian discipleship in the public square. So that's in the marketplace, it's in politics, economics. And so what are those critical issues that the society is facing in the different realms outside of the walls of the church? But it also has to do with taken seriously, what is God's purpose? Like, what purpose does God have for economics, for business, for law, within his larger mission in the world?
Sure.
So public theology, critical ethical issues that the society is facing pain, encountering pain, and then also keeping in mind God's vision or original purposes for those different spheres of life.
Got you. Okay, cool. Now, you're also the director of the Institute for Mission, Church, and Culture, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that is basically, that's a newer institute, and that's basically trying, it's an outward-facing part of the seminary, and it's aimed to help local churches do discipleship that is aligned with this mission in the public square. How does the church disciple people for their daily life and work?
Nice.
So it's dealing more, not internally within the seminary, but more out externally, right, with dealing with working with congregations.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Really, really cool, man. Well, we have this habit. We have this practice of always having an icebreaker question. So thank you for the brief introduction. But now we want to get into that. And the icebreaker question we got for today, which tends to be the go-to for all of our guests thus far, I guess the one guest we had, and then us.
all of our guests.
Yeah, all of our guests. Yeah. Is do you have a guilty pleasure for music, TV, etc.?
Yeah, so the guilty pleasure would be sleeping. Ted Lasso. My wife and I love Ted Lasso.
You should not feel guilty about that.
I'm like, is this okay to say? Yeah. Am I supposed to say the Bible? That's what.
No.
I read the Bible nonstop. No, Ted Lasso, we were way behind on that with young kids and not getting a lot of sleep. And third season dropped, and we started watching like, I think around the time that the final episode of season 3 was out. So we did a lot of, self-restraint, not watching multiple in a night. But so that would be my top pick.
Okay. Yeah. That third season might be my favorite TV season of all TV shows.
Yeah.
It was just nothing but feels.
Yeah.
Nothing but feels for every episode. I loved it. So you still got to watch that one, Jake.
I still have to take you up on your offer to steal your Apple login.
Yeah. Kind of a piggyback off of that. Is there anything that you are binging right now or reading right now?
Binging. No. Well, I did think about it. So when I do binge, ironically, I only played football 1 year. I was a soccer player. But I love watching like 90s highlight reels of football. So Barry Sanders, that new documentary, Bye Bye Barry. Cool. Yeah. It was so good.
Yeah.
My wife doesn't even like sports. And she saw me watch it and she like sat down. She's like, oh, I get it. This is like poetry. Like he is an artist. I'm like, I know. I'm a Cowboys fan. So I would, you know, watch the days when they were good. Yeah. But Emmitt Smith highlight reels and Troy Aikman. And so that is, I know that sounds weird, but like, I don't know. It's weird because I only played 1 year in football, but I just loved that era and I loved winning. Yeah. Maybe that's it. I'm just, you know, former athlete. I don't play sports anymore and I just liked winning and we were winning a lot in the 90s.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do you watch like live football now?
No, I don't. No. I don't.
Okay.
The most I get is a little bit in the morning when I get my youngest up. But ESPN is so weird now. We used to be able to watch ESPN. They give you all the highlights from the day before. It's not like that anymore, man. I don't know if any of your listeners knows what's the trick on like, they used to like all the top plays, all the whatever on Monday morning and the apps.
It's, I don't know. Maybe like you have to pay for it. Shifted to YouTube now or something, maybe.
I don't know. So.
I get all the updates just from Twitter mostly. And I don't even ask for them. I just haven't shut my notifications off yet. So X, formerly Twitter.
Let me borrow your phone and I'll look at your Twitter feed.
Okay. Gotcha.
Awesome.
What about you, Jake? You binging anything new?
Nothing new. I think last time we asked this question, I was about halfway through East of Eden by John Steinbeck.
Ooh, dude, good one.
All right. So I'm going to interrupt you right there. I totally realized.
You messed it up.
Yeah, I was thinking of, there's an Ernest Hemingway book called Something Eden, and I can't remember what it is now, but that's what I totally thought you were referencing at first.
Yeah, I didn't catch it till afterwards. Yeah. I mentioned I was reading East of Eden, and he's like, oh, I love Hemingway. I'm like, afterwards, I'm like, no.
I got to look that up now. It's going to drive me nuts.
But I was about halfway through it last we talked, and I just finished it up this past weekend. It's an incredible book.
Yeah, the ending of that,
so
beautiful.
Beautiful book. So I just finished that, and now I'm on to... King Leopold's Ghost, which is the book that Pastor K recommended about the Congo. It's a history book, but it's written almost like it almost reads like a novel. Mm-hmm. Like it's easy to read. And so, I'm only like two chapters in, but it's been interesting so far.
Nice.
So,
very cool.
How about you, Kev? What are you on to?
Well, for TV, I've been bouncing back and forth between two other Apple TV shows. The newest one called Monarch. Have you heard of that one?
I have. I haven't seen it.
It's about the organization that is doing all of the espionage and underground meanderings behind the Kong and Godzilla movies. So it's bringing all of those together in a TV show format. It's interesting, but... it's whatever. And then C, the one with Jason Momoa, where everyone is blind.
Oh.
Imagine Game of Thrones, but everyone is blind. It's very, it's intense, but I like Jason Momoa a lot.
Everybody's blind.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and they're, everyone who can see, the few people who can see, they're deemed as witches. And so you have witch hunters and such. It's very interesting, but yeah. That's what I'm doing. And I'm also just finishing up a book called Work and Worship co-written by our guest today.
You're the only person ever.
Yeah, just ever binging it hard, binging, man.
Work and Worship. That's
my wife's like, Kev, come to dinner. And I'm like, I'm binging this book right now. So, and with that said, we will be right back. All right, so we are back at it. So, Corey, before we get into it, can you give us just a quick overview of some of the motifs that you use for bringing our work into worship and where you got them from?
Yeah. So, the concern and the focus of the book came off of a bunch of interviews that I did with Christian workers and their pastors, looking at how are these churches trying to form Christians to live out their day and their faith and their daily work, and then talking to workers about what are they, you know, how is their faith making its way into how they practice their daily work. So one of the things I found, you asked the motifs. One of the things that we found is that is that when Christians understand their daily work as a priestly work, right? Mm-hmm. This is a way in which not only they represent God to people, but they actually represent the other side of a priestly work is representing the people back to God. Mm. So when Christians see themselves as royal priests is the biblical framework for that, but particularly that priestly dimension of work. So my daily work is priestly work, and my daily workplace or community is my parish, that community or place that I have particular responsibility to and for, not simply speaking or doing and acting on behalf of God, but also, and maybe even first and foremost, bringing the needs, the concerns from that work community, from that parish, before God in prayer and in worship. So the motifs that we have for that is priest and parish. And the other part of that is has to do with how then, what if we could worship God every day of the week in our daily work, which is what Pastor Artie has been teaching here for years and your pastoral staff, then what role does Sunday worship play in relationship? Like, is it the same or what role? Is it different? How is it similar or different? And so how we understand a gathered worship and scattered worship is really important. And so the other motif is gather and scatter. So we are priests in on mission with God in our daily work, and we gather together to worship as a community for corporate worship on Sunday. We don't come empty-handed. We come bearing the praises, the laments, the confessions, the petitions, and the fruits from our work parishes, bringing them into the sanctuary and offering them to God in praise, in lament, in confession, in petition, and in the offering. So those are a few of the motifs that we emphasize. And the goal behind that is the focus, the reason behind that is that what we found is that Christians that we interviewed who had the most, demonstrated the most integrated spiritual life, spiritual practices around faith and work, were those who had active practices of bringing their daily work into the worship space. So many people, and I think rightfully so, many theologians and authors emphasize what we learn on Sunday, what we do on Sunday influences how we, should influence how we live out our daily life and our workplace. And I think Matt Rustin's going to be talking about that in their next series. That is absolutely important. Jamie Smith, and if anyone knows that name, a philosopher, Christian philosopher. James K.A. Smith. He has a saying that, or a quote that says, if all of life is to be worship, the sanctuary is where we learn how. And so what we do, what we learn, but also the practices of worship and it shapes who we are. And then that spills over into how we live out our life in our workplace throughout the week. We agree with that, but from all the interviews that we've done, and then looking at biblical and historical evidence, we agree with that statement and we want to affirm that and then complete the circle and that end by saying, if the sanctuary is to be formative, your daily work must be brought in. So if I can get you to bring into on a Sunday morning, what's made you anxious this week, what's made you afraid, what's pissed you off. Can I say that? It made you angry. Sorry for PG. Sorry. We'll edit that out later. It really made you angry, right? Your hopes, your fears. If I can get you to bring those experiences with you into worship on Sunday, that's going to shape how you sing the songs, how you hear the word read and preached, how you enter into prayer. There's going to be connections are going to be made between what has taken place the past week and the coming week with what God is doing in that moment through the Spirit during worship. So, so those are a few of the reasons or the motifs, the framework pieces for our book and a little bit of why they're important or why we came to them or why we came to emphasize them.
That's so interesting because to me, it almost... I don't want this to sound like I'm casting judgment on any other church or anything, but do you lose any ability to be a place of spiritual formation unless you're bringing that stuff in, like how you're saying? How many churches are just missing that and they're just putting out this facade of spiritual growth and spiritual formation. Mm-hmm. Not intentionally by any means, but it's because they're not inviting people to bring all of life into the worship space.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. Yeah. I was listening to somebody this summer and they said, you know, when you talk about people's worship practices, you got to be careful because that's kind of like in a marriage talking about like the bedroom being overly critical. So it's a very personal and sensitive thing. So maybe we'd say is, it's missing the mark, but there are ways that their worship needs to deepen and that there's going to be problematic issues in their discipleship. Mm-hmm. They're going to have dichotomy. Like, I'm not going to really think about how I spend my money. How is that a discipleship? Or this is how I evaluate and assess or manage the employees under my care. Yeah. Like that's not really, you know, I'm taught at church how to, you know, have a quiet time and, you know, engage in prayer in the morning, but it's going to reinforce the sacred, secular, the public, private kind of dichotomy. So I fully agree with you. I just have learned I've done damage, hurt people where I could have just invited them to a deeper discipleship.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's, I know how that's going to come off to, and thankfully the majority of our listeners are probably just in our congregation, so it won't even be an issue, but I know how that would come off and I don't want it to come off that way at all. I can't help but whenever somebody asks me, do you think that you need to know Greek in order to be a good student of the Bible? I want to say yes, but that's such a jerk thing to say. Like that is so cocky and arrogant and you don't, but I mean, you kind of do like a little bit. I don't know. So
it'll get you deeper.
Get you deeper.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wasn't meaning to correct you there, Kevin.
Oh, no,
I
was just totally like, good. This is formative that's conversation.
Good. Okay. Okay. that's what that brought up for me.
Yeah. 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 So we want to start our journey, over the next 4 weeks on a happy note and talk about the trumpets of our work, these trumpets that you mentioned in the book. Can you define for us what a workplace trumpet is and maybe give us a few examples?
Yeah. So, you know, if we don't come to worship empty-handed, we come as representatives, as priesthood representatives, bringing before God from our workplace. And this is not even assuming, I know I got to be careful here in West Michigan, because some people actually are at workplaces where like it's a Christian organization or everyone they work with are Christians. Yes. That's not what I mean. Yeah. I mean, like, just think, you know, just you're at a general job or not everyone's Christian, you still are a priest. Yes. And you have the privilege of bringing the trumpets of praise, ashes of repentance, tears of lament and petitions with you on behalf of that community before God. And, so trumpets.
And these are all means of bringing our work into worship.
Yeah. So that was the other, one quick pause. When I talk about this, people will sometimes say, well, I think what you're really saying is we just need to bring our authentic selves into worship. Mm. And I want to say, absolutely. But the thing is that there's nothing magical about work. I didn't, get into this thinking, because like work is the most important issue the church is facing today. There are plenty of crises in our culture and in our world today that are more important than work. But if you want to move the needle at all in terms of shalom or justice, you care about the city, you care about society. Work, you got to deal with work. Yeah. You know, so if you think about in your congregation, like what are the different sectors of society? Where are people working? Mm-hmm. Yes, there are certain hot button issues around fair housing and rent control and issues like that that are really pressing in racism and, policing strategies and tactics. You know, yes, these are really like, these are fires we got to focus on, right? Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, like we need to think through in the congregation, like what are the different sectors of society that are different industries that, Tabernacle members are at? And so if you want to move the needle in terms of justice or shalom in Grand Rapids, it's focusing in on these issues. So yes, bring your authentic selves, but that authentic self is a body that is doing work in certain industries. And and so it's just, if I think of ask you like what made you anxious or what made you, frustrated or happy this week, if it's not like your family or, your marriage or, maybe a parent that's sick, it's probably going to be something related to your work.
Yeah.
And so work is that focal point. It's so much a part of our life. So
yeah.
That's why we focus on that, you know? In terms of trumpets, in terms of praise, like what are those? I mean, for those who are unemployed, it's landing a job, you know, for those who have been feeling unrecognized or hoping to, get some change, so a job promotion.
Yeah.
It could be a completion of a project, right? And, you know, you finally got this thing done, whether, you know, whatever it may be, your team was able to get this, you know, beta, you know, product or service or, you know, technology, you know, launched, right? This new product. For some people, honestly, and could be that they got a new boss. The old one retired. You guys didn't feed me into those. And others, it could be something about just, you know, a resolution of a conflict, right? Yeah. I interviewed this one woman and she was, you know, telling me about a conflict. She's a team lead at a marketing agency in San Francisco. And she's at an impasse, not knowing like how do I help this team resolve this conflict? Mm. And she tried everything she could. She talked to her bosses about strategies, nothing was working. And finally one day she's at her, you know, everyone had left the office and she was alone and she was just in a moment of desperation. She just went around and put her hand on every team member's desk and just prayed over them and said, God, please bring, give us wisdom, help us as a team to bring, you know, to resolve this conflict. And so it could be something like that too. It could even be coming out of a source of like pain or a long season of heartache or frustration. So all those things, right?
Yeah.
That you bring those to mind, that you bring those with you into worship. Mm. And that becomes the materiality of we don't bring animals for sacrifice anymore, but you're lifting up these praises, right? Of these very real issues from our daily life.
Yeah.
So that's how you bring your authentic self into the worship. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so now I don't know if any of our listeners are wondering this, but what I'm wondering with all of this is, what does that look like in the modern worship setting then? Like, how does that getting a job or getting a new boss or whatever, like how does bringing those trumpets into the worship setting look? Are there like general practices or is it going to be unique per congregation or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first I think it's helpful to think, to remember like, and to have a framework for like, what is corporate worship?
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the key pieces to have in place, whether you're, you know, on staff or a worship leader, or you're a participant, a congregant in the worship, is that worship is a dialogue. It's not a monologue. Yeah. That God speaks to us. He gives himself to us through the Spirit and through the Word. But we also are called not just to like say yes, sir, and thank you, but actually to respond.
Yeah.
And so when, you know, you're able to respond with, you're singing a song about like, you know, God's faithfulness or goodness. Now you have, if you have these trumpets, you're like, yes and amen, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm a parishioner, I don't have any choice of the song selection or the prayers.
Yeah.
What I would say is empowering all Christians to inhabit Sunday morning or to participate in Sunday morning with actively bringing these praises. So that could take the form of just me in the moment, like calling to mind some of these praises. Mm. It could mean stop singing and just like, you know, just, you know, sometimes just weep of just gratitude, like provided. So that would just be, I mean, I just want to give more agency to everyone, right?
Yeah.
In terms of those who are designing worship, I think it can mean a lot of things. I mean, how you invite people, you welcome people into worship, do not say, you know, the worst thing you could say is, you've all had a busy week. We've all had a busy week. We're just going to set that aside and just hear from God as if it's like a refueling station.
Just leave your stuff at the door.
Leave your stuff at the door, right? How do you frame it? And so like, you know, that's wanted in this space. And there will be time of silence. There'll be time, and this is where it depends on your tradition, like your worshiping tradition. Like, you know, are there times where there's open mic or testimonials or people can pray that out? You can build those in. Mm. I think another piece for me, I'm not on staff here, so I can say this. Like, I actually think thinking about the offering and how you frame and help people participate in the offering. It's not just drop a check or auto deposit, you know, withdraw. Yeah. So even if you do auto withdraw, you need that. That's fine. But is there something you can bring, something symbolic you can bring from your work week? And during that time of offering, actually put that, bring that forward and put it on the Lord's table or the altar. Yeah. I don't know what you guys call it here. Yeah. Or put it in the offering bucket, saying that this is a way of enacting, right? Yeah. Of enacting this sacrifice or this offering of praise, of thank you. Mm. So, I mean, one of the things my wife and I do on the way to church, is to think through a week and just say, you know, what is a trumpet, ash, petition, or tear from our work week, or from our week that we need to bring before God in worship today. Mm-hmm. So using your commute from the door of your house to the door of the church as a time to kind of reflect back on the week and just name those things. You don't have a lot of time on your commute probably, but maybe in the snow you have a little more time. Yeah. But just to name that. You don't have to go into detail, but it's like, you know, that I got this big grant or, you know, I acquired a new client or, you know, whatever it may be, you know, but thinking through praise, lament, confession, petition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it should be both that individual thing, like you're talking about, like on the way to church or whatever, as well as some form of practice, depending on what your worship tradition is, that is more corporate engaging.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're asking me like, oh, let's have a conversation with those who design the worship service or lead worship, well, then we'll have some conversation like, hey, how are you making space for this, right? Yeah. What songs are you selecting? Mm-hmm. Is it only a trumpet, songs of trumpets and praise, or is there laments in this? I mean, what is the diet we are feeding? If this is a dialogue, a conversation, worship is facilitating conversation. I cannot emphasize enough, Pastor Artie and preaching and those who preach here, like, so important. But I would say, what's the most formative are those who design the worship service, because you're putting words not only from God to us, but words on our lips to respond to God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so just like, you know, you want your kids not only to be able to say happy things to you, but sad things or hard things, or even learn how to apologize and make amends. Yeah. That's what worship is. So if we're talking to the worship leaders here, it's like, what is the diet we're giving to people? Are we really kind of a monolingual, you know, trumpet kind of people, or, you know, and I don't ever, even when I was an elder in my church, I didn't criticize, I just invited the worship leaders. Let's reflect. Let's think back on the last couple of weeks of songs, last 6 months. Yeah. Are we, you know, where are we more heavy and where can we deepen, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Our range of expression of words in worship.
So you didn't just send an email asking for more hymns?
Yeah.
Drums are too loud, Kevin.
Dude, I haven't, man, it's been a minute since I've
been on the drums. It has been a minute since you've been on the drums.
Well, it's hashtag Kazumbo campaign. what are some barriers that you see might be keeping people from bringing these trumpets to worship?
Yeah. So particularly with trumpets, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to make this concrete. I think one is like the fear of, you know, bragging, or, you know, it's like, don't let the left hand know what the right hand is doing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that could be, you know, I mean, that's a legitimate concern. I think you don't want to disqualify, right? So it's fear of bragging. The other is like, oh man, like things are going well. Like right now I'm loving my job. And like, I know my good friend, you know, Kev is like, he's hating his work, you know, like he's like, you know, he wants out and he can't get out. Right. Or, you know, Jake doesn't even have a job and like, he's been looking, he just, you know, two of my good friends just found out they were, one was let go right away. The other one's contract's not being renewed. Mm. And, you know, that's the first time in their life. And these are, you know, middle class, you know, workers who this is their profession, right? Yeah. And so I think the other, so one is looking around like, if I say something about a trumpet, like, well, what about the pain, in the room? And then I think sometimes I think another boundary, and all these we could like explore, like, well, what do you do? How do you, you know, I don't think either of those two issues should lead you to silence, you know? Mm-hmm. We need to be a community that weeps with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But how you do that, right? You don't want to say like, oh, dude, I just got a six-figure bonus. And, you know, like, I mean, you don't have to rub it in, but it's like, you know, there's ways of saying,
car,
like, and, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's ways of saying like, you know, God has been faithful and I'm so grateful that he's provided and I need to name that, you know? So in our church, like what that looks like practically, what we're trying to do is invite people just from the front to say, you know what, if you're in a place of praise, like, or first of all, if you're in a place of pain and this praise is just too hard for you, like, we invite you just to take this time and be silent before the Lord, maybe bring your pain or your lament to him. And those who are around, those who are in a place of praise where it's easier to offer praise, remember that you're lifting up that praise, not just on behalf of yourself, but for those who can't.
Yeah.
And I invite you to be mindful of that. And then those who are in a place of lament, like just at least open yourself to the praise of others. Like, you know, for me in the times of deepest lament, I wasn't bitter that the person next to me was praising. I'm like, I'm grateful. I'm not in that place. Yeah. And so it was comforting. Like I'm in a community where like we're a praising community and I also can like, you know, sit this one out, coach, and you know, like just you know, write out a pain or anger or lament to God during that space. And so I think that part of it is, just being mindful. So of the worship leaders who and pastors who frame this as kind of giving permission, but also an invitation. And knowing that if you're in a place of lament, you're not a freak, you're not bad. It's not a sign of weak faith. Yeah. And if you're in a place of praise, you have a responsibility beyond yourself, right? Mm-hmm. To lift this praise on behalf of others.
Yeah. So. Well, and even framing the praises individually. So like, are you praising God for something that you did or something that he did through you?
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot that when we bring praises, if we bring it as viewing ourselves making the accomplishment, right? We're really coming into church and praising ourselves. Right? Whereas if we phrase them correctly, right, it's not about a work I did or a project I completed, but what God is doing.
Yeah. And I think that's another part of the reason why maybe the hurdle obstacle is that it does open you up though. Cause if you start saying, God, you're the one that did this, or you're the one who were faithful that gave me the strength or made this opportunity, like you did this, that's a dangerous road to go on. Because then like what happens when when you don't get the project, when you do get laid off, then was God involved in that? And can my faith handle it when I have to can I challenge God or can I bring lament to him? So it's almost easier, like God's not really involved in my daily work, because then I don't have to, you know, I could take the credit, but I can also take the blame.
Yeah.
I just need to work harder. Whereas, you know, particularly the book of Psalms invites us to, God is always the referent for praise and for lament. So anyway, that's a little bit of thoughts on that.
That's good.
Yeah, that is good, man. Well, Corey, thank you for sharing. Jake, did you have any last minute questions?
No, I think just what you ended with, I think is great, kind of looking forward of, you know, we have these praises and joys that we can bring. And oftentimes, at least in circles that I grew up in, when I was thinking about work, it was bringing those things of joys, but we don't always bring the other side of that, of the tears and the ashes and lament. So I'm looking forward to our next conversation. I'm digging into that.
Thank you again, Corey. Until next time, we'll see you all next week.